What did the gold clerks want with you?
No idea.
You're a liar.
Yeah, you shouldn't insult people that are bigger than you.
No one gets to insult anyone.
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Well, hey everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of SpecficMedia.com's Beyond the Wall, Game of Thrones podcast, and tonight we will be talking about episode 2, which is, what would the name of that episode be there, Nutty?
The Nightlands.
The Nightlands, which I think is pretty funny since there was only one scene in Dany's world, but tonight we are joined by partial crew. We have, since you've already spoken, Nutty, we have Nutty here tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
And we also have Chooch and Viv. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Back home in Virginia, and
yes.
But we are missing a wonderful member of our team. But she's out saving the world, and that would be Christiana Ellis.
Well, yeah, she's protecting us from the danger hole.
Yes. And, and we, I do have her notes, so I will be throwing out her. Her pearls of wisdom as the show goes on, when I remember to look at the notes here.
Jeez.
That might not be any. So, one thing I do promise is that this episode won't be 2 hours because, dang it, we can't do that again because...
Okay, so let's be truthful here. It's 9 o'clock on Monday night. The podcast has been out for a couple of hours. How long is the actual episode? I haven't even had time to go from cooking dinner and after that.
It would be 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Jesus Christ. Okay. All right.
Happy Easter, everybody.
Holy. He is risen. Or something. Wow.
But, no, it was, it was quite the undertaking.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell too much on it for people that had to wait for a week to get it edited and out there, but it was a lot longer than it needed to be, and many reasons why that was. But this time we will hopefully have a lot better luck and get it out sooner. After this is over, for those that by the time anybody listens to this, the first post from the Eye of Noob will be up. I received that from Matt, and I need to get that out on the website as well. But tonight we are going to talk about the episode from last night, and I guess just general comments.
I actually watched this early because there was a big kerfuffle where it was released early in Europe, and I got my hands on it thinking that everyone in the U.S. was going to get their hands on it, and it wasn't. So I've had a whole week to think about this episode, and then I watched it again today, and I loved it. I loved it so much. But it was a lot of fun. It started out great, and it ended with just making you want to see more.
Absolutely. Chooch?
This is definitely one of those that seemed like it was short by the time it was over. I'm just like, but no, there's got to be more.
Yeah.
Wait, that couldn't have been an hour. Just jam-packed. Yep. Great.
And Viv?
Well, Chooch is the second person to say that to me today. So I think, and I agree with it, it just seemed like it was over impossibly quickly. Overall, it was a really powerful episode, I thought, and I watched it once, and I was going through a rewatch, and didn't finish the second time, which I'm really bummed about because I'm seeing things I missed the first time with the review, but I thought it was a great episode.
One thing I wanted to say about it is that they're doing, I think, a masterful job of with the increased number of storylines, being able to move from one to the other and getting the exposition in a lot better than they did in last season.
I agree.
Little things of just meeting Podrick Payne just for that split second.
I know. And
for people that have read Podrick. The book, they're like, Podrick Payne.
More wine?
Damn it, boy.
Apologies, my lord.
Leave us, Podrick. I believe we know how to pour our own wine.
And you Yay! Don't really see him, but still, that, you know, that little introduction, and then, you know, that says a lot, and you don't really have to explain when they actually, you know, have more with him, you know, hopefully in the show.
Right.
And you'll know he's already been introduced, but they're doing a lot of, like you were talking last week, Nutty, about the foreshadowing hammer.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a good job of, you know, the little ball peen hammer of just like putting little things out there that are going to pay off, you know, things that may not come to pass or really be explained or, you know, dealt with until three or four episodes from now. But, you know, even people that haven't read the books are going to be able to say, oh yeah, I remember that little, you know, thing from episode one or two. And I think they're doing a great job with that, and was really impressed with the episode overall. Let's just jump right into it as far as the episode. Probably won't spend as much time, obviously, as last time on each scene, but try to hit a little bit more of the highlights and whatever, you know, comments people have. We had the opening credits. We got to see Pike.
Which looked awesome. Which
looked awesome. The little...
I didn't notice this last time, and I'm sure it was the same in the last episode, but Peter Dinklage is top billed now.
Oh, I did not notice that.
Mm-hmm.
So busy looking at the map, didn't really notice the names. I did, I think Christiana had said last week that she thought the music had changed a little bit. And
Tech agrees, by the way.
Yeah, I listened to it a little more closely, and they definitely are using a different arrangement of the song. I especially like the suspension bridges on Pike, like when the little castle stops moving and the suspension bridges go up and down. I thought that was really cool.
That's great.
One thing that Christiana says in her notes here that you know, things like, you know, you see Winterfell even though there weren't any scenes, but she would hope, you know, at some point maybe see beyond the wall, since they're really beyond the wall right now doing things.
Mm.
I guess there's no, you know, they're not going to have Craster's Keep show up since it's such a small location, but, you know, something beyond the wall would be cool. And then she said, instead of seeing like the Red Waste where they are in, you still see Vice Dothrak when you go out to the east. So, but we did get to see Pike, so that was awesome.
Well, they haven't asked for our pictures, so clearly they can't show beyond the wall on the map yet.
Right, exactly.
We nice. Know.
Nice.
Yes, and like we said last week, and again, the little things as far as the little foreshadowing, you know, we said last week, oh, we want to see more of the table map in... We got to see more of that table, that's for sure.
Were you looking at the table?
No, but
no.
We did get to see it. There's a lot of pieces, apparently, that since a lot get knocked off.
I mean, the first five or six times, you're not going to pay attention to the table. But after that, you're going to probably, your eyes are wander a little bit, and you might notice some details then.
the first time you see it, you're like, wow, Melisandre's back is really arched. And I was like, well, that's because she's got all those pointy pieces underneath her, and so she didn't want to put her back on the table. Maybe.
It's interesting that you noticed that her back was arched.
But that's
quite observant there, Holyfield.
That's a little bit further down the line. we get the show opening with Arya urinating, which one of the things that we've mentioned in the past is that I always listen or watch with the closed captions because I'm half deaf anyway. Plus, I wanted to see how many times they say King.
So glad you did that.
Which none of us even came close to, except for Nutty.
really?
We'll talk about that at the end. But
well, that's a freaking spoiler. I don't think I can wait that long now.
No, you
know
to wait.
I'm impatient.
You have to wait. The closed caption opens with sounds of urinating. So I just thought that was
hilarious. Funny. That's how we watched it too with the closed captioning.
But if you weren't really paying attention, you wouldn't have known that was what was going on. And
no, I think you're right. I think that they have perfected keeping the moisture noises down pretty low. You kind of have to really listen for them.
But they can, But they can have semen on faces. But
right.
Clearly.
Good.
Anyway.
I'm sure she just enjoyed a nice sandwich with mayonnaise, and that's all you were seeing.
Yes, that was all. That was all there was.
Precisely.
And see, the other guy had some kind of allergy, which is why it was so funny when she kissed him. Right?
Yeah. Right.
So we start with Yoren and the men going, and everybody going up towards the wall. And we get a little bit of Arya and get to meet again Jacques and Hagar.
A man does not choose his companions. These two, they have no courtesy. A man must ask forgiveness. You're called Ari. This man has the honor to be Jacques and Hagar.
For a few seconds, get to hear him talk in his
funny way.
Funny mannerism as far as how he talks and one thing that Christiana says is that, did you notice Jacqueline's multicolored hair, which I didn't because I'm colorblind.
I did.
So there was that. And then we had the Kingsmen show up, the Gold Cloaks show up, and Yoren's great scene for him there, dealing with the Gold Cloaks. And then... Yeah, that was it, and then we've have the official announcement there that Gendry is the one they're looking for, and you have the Arya thinking that they were there for her.
And Yoren's a badass.
I could shave a spider's arse if I wanted to, or I could nick this artery in your leg, and once it's nicked, there's no one around here knows how to unnick it.
Is he not? Yes, he is.
I love Yoren in that scene.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. I told Chooch that I didn't really remember that scene from the book, but he was just freaking devastatingly, like, brave in that scene. He was just amazing.
Yeah, that's one thing that, I sort of took from the book is how much he was protecting, Arya in the book and, how much he respected the Starks and, had always... had a respect for them and just the way he acted there is just above and beyond as far as I'm concerned he's definitely awesome. Anybody have anything else about this particular scene?
I just think it shows how wonderful a job they did with casting as far as keeping the acting at the forefront, whether or not they could portray these characters. Because again, I really never gave that scene much thought beyond, they're going to go away now and maybe they'll get away. But seeing him like actually portray Yoren in that just brought it up to like a whole nother level for me. And it's just, it resonates with all of them, with Gendry, how do they pronounce it?
I say Gendry, but...
Gendry. I mean, they're all just, like, giving such amazing performances.
As I read the books, in the first book, as you meet Yoren going up to the wall, you think he's kind of a jerk. And then as you read about him helping Arya and the men and boys of the Night's Watch go north from King's Landing, you realize... Yeah, he may be kind of crass, but he really is. He's not just protecting Arya. He's protecting all of his boys. And it's more than this is just a job for me. It's, look, these guys are coming with me to the wall.
The thing is, these gutter rats belong to the Night's Watch now. That puts them beyond the reach of kings and queens.
I don't care about your petty insults. I don't care about your petty grudges. I don't care what they've done. I am protecting them, and I'll lay down my life for them. And I thought that was really neat and definitely conveyed in this scene. I don't know if they're going to do all the scenes that are similar to this, but this was definitely a good scene that projected Yoren's main goals.
I think they did. I mean, talking about the difference between the book and the show, they did such a good job in just the couple scenes where they had Yoren and Tyrion and their interactions, and you really got a feeling for Yoren as a person, and that he has a sense of humor, and that I think that they did a good job of laying the groundwork for this season and his character.
Absolutely.
The interplay between Gendry and Arya, I mean, they're doing a really good job of building that.
They have good chemistry.
Between those two, they do have good chemistry, the two actors. And did you have anything else?
Yeah, I think it can kind of come across as her similar to interactions with Jon Snow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a surrogate for her.
Yeah, and they do share that same kind of bond that she has with Jon. I mean, you do get that familiarity and friendship there.
So moving on to that, from that scene, we have the scene between Tyrion walks in, sees Varys talking with his lady, and then we have the exchange threats between Tyrion and Varys, and Christiana's notes on this was that scene between Tyrion and Varys was awesome. The fact that he has her there in the Red Keep instead of hidden outside in a whorehouse makes the fact that Varys found her a little less impressive,
mm-hmm.
for those that read the book. Still, as much as I love Varys, I loved it too when Tyrion makes it clear that he will not be threatened, even sweetly worded ones. I am not Ned Stark.
Who threatened you?
I'm not Ned Stark. I understand the way this game is played.
Ned Stark was a man of honor.
And I am not. Threaten me again, and I'll have you thrown into the sea.
He says, indeed, and then when Varys responds with his own, when he says he'll throw him into the sea, and he says, well, you might be disappointed with the results. Christiana says, oh, he threw it right back at him, and it was awesome.
Yep. And the actor playing Varys, I just noticed how well he has the character in that scene.
Yes, comparing.
He was so Varys.
And it doesn't have the audiobook of the.
Oh my God, that was horrible. Like. That was just horrible. I'm still listening to the audiobook, and every time Varys comes up, I'm like, dude, stop, please. Take your retainer out.
Then we go to the council, and we can come back with any comments, but the council sort of goes along with that, and. The line there that I liked was when discussing the terms of Robb Stark and Cersei tears up the terms and Tyrion says, "Oh, you've mastered the art of tearing up papers."
I wrote that one down too. That was perfect, especially because as I watched it, I said, look at her. She just loves to tear up paper. And then he goes, you've perfected the art of tearing up pieces of paper. And I'm like, yes.
We did the exact same thing. That was one of two points in this episode where our comment was immediately followed by a character's comment.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And then Tyrion sort of backs up what Nutty was saying last week. And you might be about to say this, Nutty, so I'm stealing your thunder. But
go ahead.
Just when I was watching, I was like, well, Nutty was saying that. Just Tyrion's how he acts around family, and, he's like, safe travels cousin, whereas, all Cersei's worried about is, oh, if you get back there alive, talk to Jaime for me,
Yeah.
Sort of sold that point home. So did anybody have anything about those two scenes they wanted to get out there?
Cersei says, one trip to the wall and you come back believing in snarks and grumpkins. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really funny bringing that throwback again. I think that's three times we've heard reference to snarks and grumpkins in mm-hmm. the show.
One thing that, was it Christiana or was it, I can't find it right now, but I think it was Christiana had said something about the fact that in the books, Tyrion was a lot less, I guess, accepting of even what Mormont was saying about the White Walkers and different things, and Tyrion, even though he says, well, I don't know what I believe, but this is the fact, but he sort of, throws out there that the White Walker attacked Mormont in his room, and that he sort of is giving a little more weight to what Mormont and the people at the Wall are saying than I think he did in the book.
Mm.
At least that's how it came across there. So moving on from there, we move to Beyond the Wall, and we have a ghost and a ghillie. and it appears that, again, they introduced ghillie in the first episode. I think it was the same actress that, you know, has the line at the end, at the end of the episode saying, you know, that rather live free or die a slave. Mm. And so she appears again, and the look on her face when she's talking to Sam and calls him brave, and Sam, you know, the look on Sam's face when he when he's told that he's brave was priceless.
That was really and Ghillie, by the way, adorable.
She is.
She's just adorable.
Look at Ghost looked amazing. I think that was a huge takeaway from that scene. That was what I was waiting for all last season. Ghost was just gigantic and scary looking, and I thought that was great. But yeah, Ghillie was cute.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a we had Dolores Ed again, and the
good lines
about the, you know, you fart when you die, and just
when we're having a serious conversation.
Yes, that was the line that got me, was just when he says, you know, you're talking about that. We were having a serious conversation here.
But love him. I just had a really stupid thought when you said that. I just thought the Game of Thrones, you fart or you die.
You fart when we die. My blessed mother, I was holding her hand when she left this world. She farted so hard, the old bed shook.
So that's why I was giggling like an idiot. Sorry.
Christiana says about that she says Dolores Ed continues to be excellent. I also like the big direwolves, so another ghost sighting was welcome. I thought the whole dynamic with Sam, Ghillie, and John was well handled. All of the characters well drawn and understandable. Mm-hmm. And again, there's a lot of information that they throw in just in that, you know, 2 minute scene.
You know,
that's covered a little bit, you know, a lot longer.
That's like multiple chapters,
right, in the book, and they threw it all in there. It all makes sense. You understand who, you know, what Ghillie's feeling. You know, they mentioned the what did they do with the boys when they're born type thing, and in the first episode, and they bring that
Hammer of Justice. Yep. I mean, foreshadowing Hammer. Mm-hmm. Period. I don't know where the justice came from.
Justice is everywhere, baby. No, I think you're right, though. I think they're condensing a lot of different passages in the book in just a couple of scenes, and they did a really good job. Mm-hmm. I was actually startled at how much they had already revealed, but it's been a while since I read book two, so that might just be me.
I did like the, again, getting back to Sam, when, you know, John is telling him, what are you trying to do, lose a hand, and if we take her, what do you think he'll cut off for that, and he's just like, you know, she's a person, not a goat.
Sam, are you in such a hurry to lose a hand?
I didn't touch her.
No, you just want to steal her. What do you think Craster cuts off for that?
I can't steal her. She's a person, not a goat.
You know, I wrote down the exact quote also, PG, so you just keep saying everything I wrote down. But nice. Yeah, it's, you know, what do you think he'll cut off if you steal her? I can't steal her. She's a person, not a goat. And to everyone who hasn't read the books and wonders, why do we love Sam so much? That's why we love Sam so much. Mm-hmm. That and, you know, I could deliver the baby. I've read about it.
A bit.
A bit. I love him so much.
And then we move over to the Red Wastes, and we have our one scene in the show with Dany, with Daenerys. You know, we find out that Rikaro is dead, which you know, he was one of my favorite characters from last season as far as the Dothraki go, and
I read something about that today. Actually, I read that actor has a different project coming up. In the books, he does not die, but that they think that they killed him off simply because he had a bigger project coming up for him to allow him to go play something else.
Yes, that's actually what Christiana wrote in her notes to me as well.
So I think
that is the case, because I was like, why they can't kill him now?
Well, I think it really effectively, though, conveys the hatred that her little band of people is dealing with from the other hordes, or, you know, from the other calls.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, it was definitely raised the stakes as far as, you know, taking out the Blood Rider that, you know, was the most important to her, and eerie as well, as she screams, screams at the end of that scene.
They had mentioned they had mentioned somewhere in the DVD extras for season one that, you know, they were making some changes to the text, and how, I don't recall if we had that conversation before, but changing mediums, you know, it's frequent to make some changes where things will work on one or not the other. Mm-hmm. And this is different than that, but that, you know, there's so much material to work with that it's not. They have to be careful of the butterfly effect of one thing, you know, having cascading huge things, but it's definitely something that they look at, so they don't do these things just haphazardly.
Right.
Just very powerfully done. I thought it was very touching.
Okay. Then we have, we move on to Theon arriving at Pike, and the little snarky laugh from Viv, from Theon being Theon.
Mm-hmm.
Serious boy.
just when you have that episode, last episode, you're like, maybe he's grown a little as a person, you know, being out in war, and there he is on the boat with his woman that wants to be a salt wife.
That's why we take salt wives, women we capture.
Capture me. Take me with you when you go ashore. Make me your salt wife.
Your flesh is on this ship.
Not after you leave. Father will punish me. He'll call me a whore.
Yeah, and she looks all of 13 years old.
He's a player.
He's done stuff. So well, though.
Yes.
It was very effective.
Yeah.
All of Theon's stuff.
And you feel what they wanted you to feel.
Well, she felt what he wanted her to feel, that's for sure. But
yes.
Having reread it recently, those chapters, he's such a jerk to her in the book that it just works so well with the way that they did it. And I love that she's not, like, beautiful or anything. I mean, it's not that she's ugly, but she looks like, you know, a traitor's daughter, you know, a common person. And I thought that they did that so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And reading the book, you just hate him so much. And when he's like, try not to open your mouth when you smile. Like, you dick.
I know. Yeah.
So after that quick scene, we move over to the brothel. And you see Ra is actually, you know, showing emotion, and you feel for her. I know some people make fun of Ra's, but I thought she did a good job. And of course, we had Littlefinger being Littlefinger and really, you know, selling exactly who he is.
At first you think he's being all caring and nice, and then it's like, bitch, you got to make me some money.
Yeah, he's doing so well there, and then he's like, I hate bad investments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the second scene where one of our comments, you know, came about, because at first he's all sweet. And then I was like, he's got to keep his backhand strong, or his pimp hand strong.
Yeah.
And then he drops the hammer.
Yeah. Drops the hammer.
Yeah,
That's awesome.
Christiana's comment was that Littlefinger's line saying, about the what happened to the baby. He was like, that was poorly handled.
The Ku Klux, they killed a baby.
Yes, that was poorly handled.
Yeah, she said that was chilling. Not evil, not wrong, but poor, you know, just Littlefinger, you know.
Yeah.
Could have been managed better.
Did anybody else have any comments about the brothel scene? We've already mentioned the
mayonnaise.
Yes. so we see how the brothel really works.
Well, I thought it was really an attention getter when they did the back-to-back sex scenes. You know, and with Theon and the daughter of the captain or the traitor or whatever. And then it took you to the brothel, and it was like a sex scene that was being watched while somebody was having something done to them. and then Littlefinger's watching the whole thing, and then he has his moment with Roz, and it was just, it was, that was really an attention getter.
Is that good or bad, Viv?
I haven't decided yet. Okay. it was very startling as all.
And then, for a moment, I was just like, well, this is all, this is a good scene showing Littlefinger being Littlefinger, but what, didn't really have at that point, I didn't think it had much of a place with everything else that was going on as far as the narrative went. But right. Then they segued over to, to Tyrion and Janna Slint and that scene. And he immediately starts talking about what happened at the brothel, and it sort of brought everything, full circle. We had our quick introduction of Podrick, or at least you heard his name and saw Shadow moving off.
They'll cast him later.
We had the great line from Tyrion about talking about Janna Slint's honor.
Are you drunk? Not have my honor questioned by an imp?
I'm not questioning your honor, Lord Janus. I'm denying its existence.
And he's like, no, I wasn't insulting your honor. I was denying its existence, which was a great line. And then we had Bronn becoming the commander of the city watch, which it was nice to see a expanded role as far as Bronn is concerned. Since I guess what was the guy, Lord Blackwater? Was that the guy's name in the book that becomes the city watch?
Oh shoot! You want me to know the name?
I expect I can find you it to out. Know, Nutty. I'm pretty sure it was Blackwater was the guy's name, or Bywater. But anyway,
yeah, I think it was Bywater, but I think that this was a great deviation because it just simplifies everything. Mm-hmm. Why add another character when you can just have it be Bronn? Mm-hmm.
Christiana's notes about that particular scene, when Tyrion was talking about sending Janna Slint to the wall, and he talks about the wall. He said, I found it very beautiful in a brutal, terribly uncomfortable sort of way. I always love that in the book when Tyrion sends Janna Slint to the wall, so that glad that they played that out in the show.
Yeah.
And then Christiana says the last line of the scene where he's talking to Bronn, and Bronn says, "Oh, I'd ask how much." Bronn. She says Bronn's awesome so much of the time, but it's easy to forget his darker side. And the look on Tyrion's face when that scene plays out is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention that don't mess with whores or Tyrion gets pissed.
That's true.
Because he really, really does not like it when you treat whores like shit. And it's Sir Jacelyn Bywater. So yes, you were right.
Jacelyn Bywater, yes. Next we go back to Yoren and Arya and Gendry. They have some humor in that scene. My favorite scene. Yes, we have the humor in that scene where, Arya and Gendry are, their friendship, growing friendship, and, he says, you shouldn't insult people that are bigger than you, and she has my favorite line of the show, and she's like, then I wouldn't be able to insult anyone.
Yep. So,
here, where she tells Gendry her secret, and he gets his, which is one of my favorite things in the books, where he immediately half joking but half serious is like, oh, you're a lady. I have to treat you like a lady. And
I should be calling you milady.
Do not call me milady.
As milady commands. Well, that was unladylike.
She's like, don't do that. That's going to blow my cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was very charmingly done.
Yep.
And when she shoves him, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It just reminded me of the, going back to what Chooch said, how he's a surrogate for Jon Snow. It was the same kind of interaction as when she's trying to get Nymeria to get her gloves, and Jon's like, most impressive, and she goes, shut up.
Yeah.
This shove was just that same kind of a response for me.
Yeah.
My friend Molly's comment was, they should get married.
Oh, I know, aww. Right?
They're gonna,
she says.
Ooh, I don't know. The series
is not over yet.
Yeah, no. That's what I said. There's lots of books. You never know. But.
And originally, there was supposed to be a good 10-year time span in between some of the books. So I've always thought that was an original idea. Mm. But I don't know if it's going to happen or not, because it doesn't seem like that distance in time is going to be happening in the books. So.
Is there any other comments about this particular scene anybody would like to talk about?
Nothing other than Gendry, whatever his name is. He is very cute. I just think that we needed to make a point of that.
Mm.
I don't think we've paid any attention to him because he's supposed to be so young in the books, but he's looking pretty good.
There we go.
Chooch, do you have anything to say?
Chooch thinks nope. He's good looking too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I do him.
Well, I just learned something.
This is a happy woman.
Like you haven't heard me say that before.
So then from there we go back to Pike, and my one note here is Theon is such a boob.
Oh, so, wait, yeah. I did have a thought. I'm sorry, I forgot.
That's okay.
Because I wrote it down and then I forgot. No, I noticed that in this scene and in other scenes, people are talking more and they're sharing more information than they did in the books. For instance, you know, what is it? Rob, last episode, was talking about the letter from Stannis and told Jaime that, and, you know, about the incest accusations, whereas Jaime's got no clue in the books. And then here, Gendry tells Arya about how Lord Arryn and Lord Stark came to see him and the questions that they asked and so forth. And people seem to share more information, but I think it works really good. And I think it works better and it's more realistic to me, because I think in the books, a lot of times people just jump to conclusions and you say, how would they know that?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump down to one of Patman's comments, because he pretty much says the same thing. He says, I think it was interesting story choice to have Gendry know Arya's secret so early on, because I think it will really facilitate exposition. So, in the books, almost everything going on with Arya is internal, and I think she needs to have a confidant to get some of that stuff out for the viewer.
Yes.
So I agree with that. And we have, you know, probably, I know from talking with Nutty that we were both greatly waiting for the scene that plays out here with
Yara.
With Yara Asha, or I think it was Christiana who calls her, what does he call her? Yarasha.
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 You know, we have the scene of him, you know, seeing a woman.
Did we explain that to Chooch last time about what that whole thing is about? In the book, the character's name is Asha, but in the show, they changed the name to Yara because they thought it was too similar to Osha, who is in Winterfell.
Yeah, I think I remember.
Okay.
Yeah, we did mention that. And
I did read somewhere this week, somebody ranting, they're like, Asha's a point of view character in the books. Osha is not. Why couldn't they renamed Osha and kept Asha?
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of a moot point because I found that the compelling, merciless delivery of that the actress made of the character, I mean, that is who she's supposed to be. That is how she freaking is in the book.
And a rose not how by any other name.
She's not what I physically imagined Asha to be, but she kicks ass as Yara, and she totally embodies that character. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, the first second I saw her, I was like, oh, that's not my Asha, but...
Right!
But, like you said, she was really good, and the whole, I mean, definitely believable.
She
may be the best-looking, you know, woman from the Iron
Islands. From the Iron Islands, yeah.
But, you know, Theon just sees a woman, and so he does his thing.
I can take you there.
I bet you can.
You've been at sea long? Or were there just no women where you came from?
Unlike you.
You don't know what I'm like.
You don't know what you're like. Maybe you need someone to teach you.
Sticks his finger in her.
But she didn't grab his cock.
No.
Like she does in the book. So, I mean, it's both ways. It's
still hilarious, though.
And so inappropriate. Ew. And so good. Chooch, what'd you think?
What was the question?
Okay. Of the scene between Theon and his sister.
On the horse.
Oh, right.
When he didn't know she was his sister.
It was...
You did watch it, right?
Yeah. It's kind of mixed as we first saw it. So first I was thinking, oh, well, you know, she clearly knows who he is and she's just ready to cash in. But I was also thinking there might be something else going on.
Yeah.
Well, clearly there was.
Yeah, I thought that it was really fitting for Theon to have his huge celebratory gathering as he arrived back in his homeland, and then nobody was there, nobody knew who he was, nobody cared. Chick shows up, and he settles for that, and just figures he's going to bang her by the end of the day. It's just so Theon. Yeah.
And then nobody showing up, I completely expected.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love his little talk with the old man on the pier where he's just like,
I don't like wine.
The air's here. I'm talking about me, man. But
that was funny.
And then
in the book, I just wanted to mention that it's his uncle that comes to greet him. And this scene actually between him and Yara come later and comes after his meeting with his father. I don't know if they're just going to skip his uncle. His uncle's a priest of the drowned god. I don't know if they're going to skip him or introduce him later.
They're introducing him later.
Probably later.
I've already seen him in previews and stuff.
Oh, all right. Because it was an interesting choice. But again, I think that it works better with his sister coming to meet him. And for some reason, even though I've read the book a couple times, I always think when he gets off the boat, it's his sister. But every time I read it, I'm like, oh, right, it's the damn fair.
Yeah.
So.
Then we meet Balon, and again, Theon gets his hopes dashed that he's actually important, and the whole scene there was done very well, and Yara being the favorite son in these terms. But yep. One note that Christiana says is that one interesting complexity is that as horrible as the Greyjoy clan is, generally, they are the only family in Westeros that is willing to let a girl be an heir.
Yeah.
So there's that.
So far as we've seen, because there are others in later books.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that probably the line that delivered the most important information in that whole scene was when his father said, "Stark had you longer than I did."
Mm-hmm.
In his mind, he's Stark's kid.
My fears have come true. The Starks have made you theirs.
My blood is salt and iron.
Yet the Stark boy sends you to me like a trained raven, clutching his message.
The offer he makes is one I proposed.
He heeds your counsel.
I've lived with him, hunted with him, fought at his side. He thinks of me as a brother.
No, not here, not in my hearing. You will not name him brother.
And that says, came across.
Asha Yara, took over the boat. She must have been about 7 or so when she took over the brother's boat. But anyway.
We should probably just start calling her Yara, huh?
Yeah.
Instead of Asha Yara. Yeah,
I just think it's funny, so that's why I'm doing it. But
how cool was that fireplace?
Wicked cool.
I want that fireplace.
I don't want it, but it's wicked cool.
I want it. I also want to live in the Pike
because
It just looked exactly how I pictured it. And I mean, not Pike. I mean, the castle. The castle's cool.
Oh yeah.
It's exactly how I pictured it.
Talk about continuing the whole production value this season. Oh. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah. The one sort of image from the episode from Theon's perspective is when everybody else is sort of walked out and he's just left there and he just has this look on his face like, what the hell did I just walk into?
Yeah.
And he was called a whore.
Whore, a girl in skirts.
Oh my God. He was totally like stripped of all his dignity by his father, like physically when he took that jewel off of him and his cloak just dropped to the ground. It was like, oh man, you could be naked and it couldn't be any more embarrassing.
Yep. And they brought up something that I absolutely love from the Iron Islands is, did you pay the price of gold or the price of iron?
Ah, yes. The iron. Yeah. That was
the cool. Iron price. And I thought that was awesome. And had Theon remembered that when he spoke, when he and Rob came up with this idea, things might have gone differently.
And then, Balon doesn't say what his plans are, but definitely doesn't look good when he says, who said I was talking about the Lannisters?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
A little foreshadowing there.
What do you think's going to happen, Chooch?
I don't have a clue. Okay. I'm just going with the ride mostly. Okay.
From there, unless somebody else had something, we move back over to Davos and we get to meet Salvador San and Davos's son, Mathos. Interesting conversation there between the smuggler and the pirate. We definitely learn again the exposition. You know, learning that that Davos was a smuggler, that he lost his fingers, that you know, just a little discussion there about the his son being being a true believer and. Just a lot of information that sort of spread out throughout the books is sort of thrown out there, and very well done. They discuss Salvador's fleet of 30 ships and getting them to help Stannis. Was there anything anybody wanted to mention about this particular scene?
I really like the son's line, you know, when he's saying, "I've seen everybody pray and never does anything," and then the son saying, "Well, I prayed for you." It's pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. From Salvador San, "You don't know how persuasive I can be. I never tried to fuck you."
Oh my god. Oh my god.
I'm gonna fuck her.
He was fantastic. He was a fantastic character. I loved
it when he was walking away and he sort of moves towards Mathos and he just like backs away, like, "Oh, don't touch me.
We're not attacking King's Landing so that you can rape the queen. I'm not going to rape her. I'm going to fuck her. As if she would just let you.
You don't know how persuasive I am. I never tried to fuck you."
I thought it was really interesting the way that Davos is and the way that his son is, because they're, even though it's father and son and they're very much involved in each other's lives, they could not be more different. Do you know what I mean? Ooh. They seem like at the core, like very different people. The son seems to be, you know, refined in his own mind much more so than his father is. And I think that was a really interesting dynamic.
Let's see what Christiana said. "I like Salvador San, but I don't think anyone who hadn't read the books would get any of the stuff about Davos being a smuggler and losing his fingers and only an extremely basic understanding of why he follows Stannis. So they really haven't gone into, you know, the whole thing. They sort of gone around the edges, and I'm sure they'll have some, you know, scene between Stannis and Davos later that'll get more into that. would have liked more with him. I did like some of the religious debate between Davos and his son. And then she says, in quotes, "Salvador San is a good name for songs." Salvador says.
Chooch, were you confused by any of that scene?
Not really. I think there's definitely things I didn't pick up on. And Viv saying with the finger line, you know, "Oh, back that up. This is important." And in my head, I would just kept thinking, well, all I could think of was the Great John when
yes.
The Dire Wolf did his fingers. Right, yeah. I didn't realize anybody was missing any fingers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we haven't seen Davos without gloves on, so.
Yeah.
Well, you do see him later, so.
So, yeah, I had no clue they were talking about him.
If we're done with that, the next scene is one of the best acted scenes in the show, which would be Cersei and Tyrion sitting and talking about first Tyrion trying to make his sister understand that she's turning the people against her and she not caring very much, but then he finds out that it wasn't her that gave the order, it was Joffrey, which I think everyone had sort of, well, I don't know, I had sort of thought it was Joffrey based on that. I wasn't remembering from the book just the way that it happened, and Janos being Joffrey's man, it seemed like that's how it happened, but Tyrion was certainly a little surprised by that, I think. We have the scene going on, and then it ends with Cersei, you know, getting her barb in to try to cause him as much pain as possible by talking about, you know, killing their mother, and that being the, "You're such a funny, you were always so funny, but never as funny as that first joke," and going from there. There's no bigger joke in the world than that, she says.
But none of your jokes will ever match the first one, will they? You remember, back when you ripped my mother open on your way out of her and she bled to death.
Go ahead, Nani.
That's something that we don't find out until like book three or four. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Why does Cersei hate Tyrion so much?
Yeah.
Why does she always treat him with disdain? And that's a bit of a treat, I think. And I think mm-hmm. it's very good that they put it in to the show for the viewers, because it's something that as a reader, I always wondered, you know, why is it that Tyrion has such a great relationship with his brother, but not his sister? And when you see that, you can see why she looks down on him so much and how it pains her to have to work with him and to have to listen to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was a great scene and a great addition.
Yeah. I agree.
I thought they were going to go a little bit more into, you know, because she says at one point, you know, you never cared about this stuff and Jaime never cared about it. Because mm-hmm. she always, you know, talks about my, you know, dad, Tywin, you know, I was the one that he counted on and put all this pressure on to be a ruler. And so I'm the only one that has taken this responsibility seriously and so on, but she didn't really go as far down that road as I thought she might. But yeah, but I agree, I like that came out the way it did and sort of struck him pretty hard at the end of that scene. He definitely had that hurt look on his face.
Well, I think it somehow makes Cersei more likable too. It's that, because up till now, the only idea that we've really had on why she hates him is because he's an imp and he's deformed and he's an embarrassment to her. And this actually gave a little more depth to her character of actually what it comes down to is a little girl missing her mom. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be everything that she's taking out on him for all these years.
I don't know if it makes her more likable. I definitely understand her more. I kind of hate her for blaming Tyrion for her mother dying in childbirth.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not like it makes sense or anything.
No, it doesn't.
It gives her, it makes you see that there's some kind of a heart there other than like, you know.
Yeah, it's not just embarrassment.
Right, right. Yeah.
From there, we go back to Davos, and he gets to see Davos's hand for the first time as he's pushing pieces around the table map. But it was,
I didn't even notice that.
It was so quick. It was so quick. I had to rewind. I was like, is that, you know, are his fingers missing there? Or is that somebody else? And it wasn't like obvious, but it was there. So if you, look at it again, you can see his half fingers pushing little things across the board. then we have, Melisandre and Stannis coming in and, quickly chasing them out of the room, but before they go, she whispers to Mathos about I didn't write down the line, but something to the effect of dying.
Death by fire is an honor and a privilege.
The cleanest way, something, or the most honorable way to die, or whatever she says. So doesn't bode well for him, I don't think, with that. But and then the conversation between Stannis and Melisandre, you know, get more of what we alluded to and what Christiana really was sort of selling home, is that, you know, the thing on the beach was more of a sham, just to you know, because he was saying the words, I said your damn words, he says, and you know that he doesn't really believe in it as much as she wants him to, and she uses her womanly wiles to have him take the plunge, so to speak.
Oh, dear.
Interesting. He was resisting her, and then she said, oh, but I'll give you a son. And he's like, oh, wait, a son?
I know. With all of the talk about bastards and everything else, all she has to say is, I'll give you a son. And mm-hmm. she's like, woohoo.
He forgets his wife.
Yeah. Well, and one thing I noticed is that she said that his wife was sickly, which is not the case in the book,
right,
and that she's only delivered stillborns and he has no kids, whereas in the book, he has a daughter and his daughter's sickly.
Right.
And so does that means that he doesn't have a daughter and we're not going to see Patchface or mm-hmm. any of that?
Yes, we have Christiana's notes, which we mentioned, one of which we mentioned earlier, was glad we did get to see more use of the map table. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Preach on, sister.
Is it just me, or did it seem like Stannis was not just seduced in an ordinary way, but perhaps actually under some more mystical control from Melisandre? She's practically hypnotizing him. And I didn't really get that. I thought all she did was, you know, lick his ear and say, "I'll give you a son," and that was pretty much all he needed.
And then splayed on the map table. Yeah.
Well, I'd have to go back and see if her ruby is.
I was just thinking that same thing. I didn't think to look and see if she was wearing that necklace again.
I don't think she was wearing anything. I don't think she needed it.
Yeah, I kind of feel like she didn't need it.
There was something that I exclaimed during the scene, and I can't share it because it's a total spoiler. This is something that was never spelled out in the books, that the two of them had been actually together. It's always alluded to, so I wonder if this is another one of those things where Martin said, "Look, we hinted at it, let's just spell it out." Yeah. if the producer said, "All right, Martin, did they actually have sex?" "Yes." "Okay, we're going to put it in."
Well, I thought it was clear in the books to me that that it was Stannis's wife that brought him to this religion, the red light. That whole thing was all because of her interest in it, and that Melisandre had gotten her ear, but they seemed to be just like skipping that whole portion, or it didn't happen that way. But she certainly has got Stannis on her side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, in the books, it really feels like his wife was the one that set it all up. And, like, his wife's like, "Fuck her if you want. I don't care." Yeah. She's our priestess. She can do whatever she wants with you.
Yep. And Christiana says pretty much what you said, Nutty. It was also, will we not have Stannis' daughter and Patchface exist at all? Which, I've never liked Patchface that much.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like him, but it seemed like it's a character where they've been building up, and this has nothing that Chooch, you know, needs to hear, but they've spent books just sort of, he's a character, and that, you know, you expect something to happen with this guy, and you know, I've been sort of disappointed with that. But anyway, maybe in book 6 or 7, but,
I know.
You've read book 6 and 7?
No. I was quoting Patchface. I know.
Be damned impressive. Like,
I would actually have to, like, I got in my TARDIS, and I got to tell you, Winds of Winter.
I would have to drive to Canada and bow down at your feet in honor of you if you had read those two books already.
Well, then I actually did it. If that'll get you up to Canada.
Aw, baby cakes, you don't need to lie to me to get me to Canada. I'll come.
And we have the table being used for what it needs to be used for.
Exactly.
The pieces being, you know, thrown off. And from there, it cuts over to Beyond the Wall. And John following Craster out into the woods. Craster not exactly being very... Craster not exactly being sneaky about it. He just sort of walks out holding a crying baby, so...
It's his baby. He can do whatever he wants.
He can do what he wants.
Baby, it's his house. Or shack.
Go out into the woods. John waits for him to walk by. Hears the baby, continues on, and then we see what we assume with the clicking and the noises that it is a White Walker grabbing the baby.
Is that what we assume?
That's what I assume.
I felt it was unclear.
It wasn't the lost smoke monster? Is it
a giant?
Smoke monster.
what is it? I couldn't tell what it was, because in the books, we don't see this scene. We just, Mormont explains that, you know, Craster gives the boys up as a sacrifice, and that they would love to take the boys to the wall and make them, you know, men of the Night's Watch, but Craster believes that sacrificing them to... you know, the creatures of the forest is what keeps him safe. And it's just like a throwaway line. But seeing this scene, I was like, what is that? is that a giant? Is it an other? Is it a white walker? You know, and I'm trying to figure out what it was, but
is it a wildling? You know, is it one of the children of the forest?
It's the image is as descriptive as a video of Bigfoot. So it's really hard to know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Now the only reason, and again, I think this partly comes from watching with the closed caption, is that the clicking noises and the different whatever that you hear in the background are the exact same noises that the creatures are making in the forest in the first episode of season one, where, you know, they're chasing the guys from the wall that they kill.
Interesting.
So that was the assumption that I was making, but again, they did not show enough to make it clear, and they probably did that on purpose. So John sees that, but then Craster, comes back and knocks him out, and that is the end of the episode. And my note there only is John, uh-oh. So
that's an awesome ending.
Yeah, that's a pretty good cliffhanger.
And Divergent.
Yes.
Well, I found myself each time they came back to that campsite, or not campsite, but the home, thinking, okay, you know, there's the old farmer, and who's going to get in trouble for stooping his daughter? And then, oh, clearly it's going to be Sam. And then the whole pregnancy thing is like, wait a minute. Oh, wait. And then he catches John. I'm like, oh, wait.
Yeah, you're like the one going, guy not interested in girls on the night's watch. It's
going completely different directions than I had anticipated, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that Shall was the rate? Episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the episode.
Oh, hell. Just
looking to see if we had any more notes from Christiana that I had missed. Her thoughts on the being out in the forest was glad to see the White Walkers show up again, but another departure from the books. How will this turn out? So, as Nutty mentioned, a little bit of a move from inferred to, actually explaining it a little bit. So ratings, Christiana did not give me a rating. So she did say she enjoyed it very much. So, Nutty, what would be your rating of the episode?
9 out of 10 torn parchments. And that is going up from last week's episode, because I think that this was an even better episode. I think that the pacing was really well done, and I enjoyed it so much.
Chooch?
10 out of 10 fingers. Ooh, thought it was just perfectly executed.
You stole mine. You cheated.
I had to make something up. I guess we're thinking alike.
My cheat. I already had it written out. Oh, Chooch. I got nothing.
No, I thought it was just perfect episode. Like Nutty said, great pacing, great acting, and it's great.
Well, Viv, you can go back to your what I think will be a favorite rating system, which is the really goods.
Oh, the really goods?
That's what you did last time.
So. I told you I haven't listened to the episode yet. It was more mini goods than I can, or really goods than I can possibly list here. It was so good.
Okay, and I will give it 1 out of 1 severed heads. severed Blood Rider heads. No, I thought it was great. I probably liked the first one a little bit more, just because they delivered on so much expectation from waiting for 8 months and just how good it was. But yeah, like Nutty said, just they packed so much in this episode, and they did it so well. And again, I think the art direction, the editing, transitions from scene to scene, and how they're putting it all together. I think they're just, hitting a home run so far this season. So
the landscape backdrops are just exquisite, and we had a lot more Aria this time. So I think that's, I think that's why I like it at least as much as the last episode.
Oh. No Sansa whining.
No Sansa. No, I still say Sansa brought it last.
I know. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No Rob.
No Winterfell. No Rob. But
no from Catelyn.
From Catelyn. No Catelyn. But
no funky Roderick Beard.
Yep. but only one scene with Daenerys, but we'll have a lot more of, at least from the previews, some people we didn't see this week, we will see next week. So,
and there are just so many characters. Mm-hmm.
And next week's episode is called What Is Dead May Never Die.
Ooh.
Mm.
Now I'm going to be thinking on that for a while. We have our contest from last week. Our contest would have been how many times the word king or a variation of the word king is used in the episode, and how many deaths did we have. Here were the guesses. We had Christiana with 14 king references and 4 deaths. Chooch had 6 kings. What were you thinking? And 2 deaths. Viv had 9 and 9. I had 12 and 12. And Nutty had 27 kings and 5 deaths. As always, I always go high with the number of deaths because I'm just hoping that someday we'll have a battle that's, you know, not
it's not expected fun.
And people just get killed. But I'm counting Ricaro as a death, even though it was off screen, because we'd get to see a severed head. So
and he's a major character.
He's a major character.
And, well, not major. He's a minor major.
Yeah. Or major minor.
Dead now.
And we had 33 kings in the episode.
Yikes.
Wow.
Wow.
A couple things I wasn't expecting. I forgot, you know, King's Landing, they said a few times. the King's Road, they said a couple times. They said Kingdom at least once or twice. And I considered those variants of the word king. We had a couple things where they had said king twice in the same sentence, so I was, you know, counting furiously as I was rewatching it this afternoon. So
on that scene with Theon where he was banging the chick on the boat and he was saying crown me, I'm the king, crown me, I'm the king.
I think you were listening to a different audio track, but
oh, sorry.
Yeah. You gotta be careful when you get asked to be crowned in Game of Thrones.
Right, exactly.
Thor's hammer. So based on that, Nutty was the closest with kings. Chooch was the closest with deaths, but he went over. I don't know if we had rules about going over or not.
You can't go over.
Can't go over. So we're giving it to Nutty for week one.
Go Nutty.
Didn't I go over? How many deaths was it again? I'm sorry.
There was only one death, and you said 5, but you had you were closest with kings, so we're giving you the win.
I got a half win.
Because I didn't release the episode until today, we didn't have anybody, unless, actually, the email, you had it set up to go to you, Viv. Did you get any emails?
For the survey?
For the survey.
Just my own.
Okay.
So, just the one I did for me. Yes.
What should be the survey for next week?
So for next week, deaths.
I have
we
an
always
idea.
Do deaths. And what is your idea?
I think that we should count up the number of times that Theon's storyline progresses while he's banging somebody.
I don't know. I think he's kind of castrated at the pike.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna have too much fun anymore.
Well, that would have been a good one for
exposition
this episode.
Cock.
Yeah.
Then I got nothing.
Bodily fluids. How many? No.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's a good one, but
have fun counting it.
Yeah. Well, I had. What were some of the ones we had last time that we didn't use? That we had the comets, but they pretty much played that out. I don't know if they're going to be showing the comets anymore.
Yeah, they didn't show them this episode.
Kind of a gamble might be. How many times do we hear Hodor?
Yeah,
they may not make it back to Winterfell, but...
Well, maybe they're taking turns.
They're due.
And they're definitely going back to Winterfell for next episode, but...
So let's do Hodor.
So how many times are we going to hear Hodor?
Hodor.
Hodor. Okay, I like that. We've got deaths and how many times we hear the word Hodor.
Should we put our guesses now?
No.
No.
No, I want them to be a surprise. I never said
that. Oh, okay.
Time.
Yeah, everybody's supposed to do the survey so that they can be collected anonymously.
Or can you find that survey?
That would be at specficmedia.com. Yep, yep. Click on the BTW button and then go to the episode. Yeah, that's.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a quicker way to say that. That's easier for listeners.
Well, then say it.
I'll know it. You're the one that does the survey.
It just gets emailed to me.
I don't do anything.
Okay. We're trying to get them to go to the site and get sucked into the content and stay there.
I actually have to put new content on the site. But I said, there will be an Eye of Noob post later tonight. And so by the time you hear this, at least the one for episode one will be up, if not the one for episode two. We will talk to you guys next week.
Do we have any feedback? Hold it.
What?
You have to welcome Emerson to Westeros.
You're talking about Patrick? What? Like Patrick ever listens to our...
I don't care.
Listens to our podcast. Patrick McLean, our mutual friend and podcaster, he and his wife, Christy, had a baby boy. His name is Emerson, and I'm sure, yes, he will be learning all about Westeros in the coming years. Lovely little child, which is what made Viv so distraught watching all the little babies being hurt in episode one.
Yeah. That sucked. Emerson is awesome.
Feedback was really Pat. We had the one from Patman.
And there was a comment.
Was there? Well, you read.
There was a comment justifying me. Oh, I got to open it up again.
Justifying you?
Because I did not.
Justifying me.
I did not see any comments.
How do you need justifying?
Because you guys said I was so obscure about trying not to spoil that nobody knew what I was talking about.
Oh yes, I did. Somebody did say that they knew what you're.
Deuce.
They knew what you're.
Deuf. Woohoo! Was so excited to see a new episode of your podcast on iTunes after so long. I have one gripe to bring up about Asha Osha. Name change. I talked about this earlier, actually. I'm sorry. This is Doof that said it. He has one gripe to bring up regarding the Asha / Osha name change. Asha is a point of view character. Osha is not. Why did they change Asha's name? I wouldn't have given two hoots if Osha's name was changed to Yoki or Yarrow or whatever. So angry. Also, I know exactly which kiss you were referring to, Nutty. Smiley face. Thank you. Justified. Somebody knew what I was talking about.
Nerd.
Gentlemen, we have been served.
We admit, we bow to your nerddom.
Yes, we do.
Patman's full comments here. There were some really interesting bits in episode two, doing an excellent job sticking to the overall story, adding in some bits that I feel work well. I think it is good to make it clear what Craster does with his sons, which we mentioned wasn't as clear in the book. I'm not going to complain about seeing a naked Melisandre. So it's fine with me to take what is rumored to be in the books and make it quite clear. I feel sorry for Stannis' men who are in charge of keeping the map table up to date.
And clean.
There are a lot of scenes from the book that played out as I had imagined, like Theon's homecoming, burn, and Janos getting sent to the wall. I approve of Bronn getting an expanded role in the story as replacement commander. Fine with characters on the TV show having roles that might encompass more than one of the minor characters in the books. I was stoked to vaguely glimpse Podrick Payne, my hero. So we know now that Patman is a big fan of Podrick Payne. Visually, the castle at Pike was excellent, much better realized than the Eyrie was in season one.
Agreed.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't show much of the ascent to the Eyrie. That's what I was disappointed with.
True, but they
you really got a sense of what the Pike. You really got a look at what I feel like you got a better look at the region.
Oh, so you're talking more about the outside and that.
Kind of the scale and the grandeur.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought the interior stuff of the Eyrie was awesome with the moon and all that stuff.
They had two rooms that I remember, and one was the like courtroom, the castle drama room with the moon door, and the other was the sky cell. But this one, it just seemed like they spent more time giving us. Because remember, I mean, that whole ascent was like a freaking chapter, wasn't it? When they were going to the Eyrie?
Oh yeah, and they have to use all the ropes yeah. and pulley systems and
yeah, that demonstrated thing, how yeah. wonderfully defended it is and how, you know, strong it would be to be, what a good place it would be in case of battle and stuff. And I felt like they kind of skipped over a lot of that, and they just, you know, here they took their time with it, I felt, a little more.
Okay. Patman continues with, I think it was an interesting story choice to have Gendry know Arya's secret early on, which I actually read that earlier. And then he ended with, Yoren kicks ass. That's all.
Yes, Yoren does.
So that was the feedback. So at the end of the episode, the lovely voice of Viv gives you that information in our outro. And I guess that was it. Did anybody have anything else they wanted to say?
Not I.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to get this out a lot faster this time, I promise, because it's not 2 hours. It's only an hour and a half.
Woo, woo.
Well, it won't be that. When we're done, it's only going to be an hour and 10 minutes, probably.
Nice.
But thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.
Come closer. And I'll shove that stick up your bunghole and fuck you bloody.
And whatnot. And so
Patrick's
forth.
Already exhausted.
He's like, I haven't even started talking and they're interrupting me already.
He's like, I haven't even done the intro yet. Fucking talking over me.
Well, hey everybody, and welcome to episode 2.
You should taste her fish pie.
I don't think Lord Varys likes fish pie.
How can you tell?
I can always tell.
Men like Lord Varys and I can't let our disadvantages get the best of us. We'll make a fisherman of him, yeah?
Let me go back. My notes are very spotty. Yeah, let me go back 30 seconds.
I'm not a girl.
Yes, you are. Do you think I'm as stupid as the rest of them?
Stupider. The Night's Watch doesn't take girls. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, that's true. You're still a girl.
I am not.
Yeah, well, pull your cock out and take a piss then.
I don't need to take a piss.
Suck it, Holyfield.
Blah, 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 blah. I'm trying to get back on track. You dropping off just threw me completely off.
Well, we already resumed the conversation about Stannis' wife, so...
I know.
Go.
I lost.
Well, then it's the banging scene on the table map.
Oh, yes.
What the hell?
How did you forget that?
Threw me off.